Hello everyone, I am Pankaj Pipada from Indian Institute of Science, and I am going to present the paper LoadIQ, Learning to Identify Workload Phases from a Live Storage Trace. This is a collaborative work between Indian Institute of Science and NetApp Bangalore. In this talk, first I will propose what is phase identification and then put it in context of the current work. Then I'll formally define what problem we are trying to solve and then go into methodology and then presenting the evaluation. So first, the motivation. It has been shown before that the workload context and the I/O characteristics generator are very closely related. In this case, the workload context consists of the end user actions, the application phases, and the host platform as well. In such a case, each phase has its own set of I/O characteristics. So if at all the storage system can know the whole workload context, it can optimize things in a better manner rather than directly observing short-term I/O trends and then deciding on what is to be done. So why exactly context? So first of all, what exactly is a phase? So phase can be considered as any specific I/O pattern that we want to observe over a period of time. For example, e-commerce workloads have certain browsing phases, shopping phases. Databases can go through transaction processing or maybe backup maintenance, etc. Also, as presented, Hadoop also can be considered one of the examples where map is a separate phase and reduce is a separate phase. So given that such phases exist, we can use the knowledge of such phases in identifying or making certain storage system decisions, such as deciding on what type of cache to use, tuning the storage level read ahead, or even performing or giving this as an input for differentiated storage services frameworks. So the whole point is that if we are able to tag the phases without the input from application or non-intrusively, the optimizations possible, the scope of optimizations possible increases quite a lot. There is a 2006 survey paper which tells various techniques that have been used currently for phase transitions, detecting phase transitions, and also gives the problem or gives the problems related to detecting such phase transitions. So in related work, there are a large number of studies which try to get aggregate information about systems. Given that we are not trying to get aggregate information and we are trying to detect specific patterns within an application, such trace analysis methods cannot be extended for identifying phases. We use the correlation between the application context and the I/O patterns generated for detecting specific phases. In the use cases, there is a 1997 paper which dynamically drives prefetching and caching decisions based on inference of sequentiality within workloads. So they try to use a single I/O pattern, meaning say sequentiality for various storage optimizations. We don't try to detect a specific I/O pattern, but we try to put up a generic technique where any pre-trained pattern can be detected in the future. The work closest in spirit to this work is a 2010 work which tries to identify workloads from NFS traces. This work uses variation in opcode sequences for detecting specific workloads which are running. But it has limited applicability in VM environments where the variations in opcodes are not that large. So in summary, what we try to do is we try to identify any set of specific patterns based on past training. We try to create a generic technique which can detect any phases and not depend on heuristics which can apply to particular applications per se. And we try to identify phases within VM environments also. So formally stating, we build a tool to track workload phase shifts in real time with the desired properties of non-intrusiveness, Also, the discrimination among the known classes of workload phases is to be accurate. The system is extensible in that any unknown I/O patterns which cannot be trained previously also can be formed as a phase in the future while the system is running, and traces belonging to that phase also can be detected. It is automated, and it is robust against flux in real world access path. So we detect phases by observing traces from the workloads. For example, you can consider NFS trace which has various components. So the observable features are timestamps, opcodes, file handles, offsets, etc. We can denote a phase, or we can represent a phase by any trace snippet captured over a certain time window as being representative of that phase. We can analyze any of these components to actually represent the phase in our algorithm. In this paper, we use the offset field itself as representation of the phase, but the system is extensible so that other fields also can be incorporated to give more information to the system. For detecting phases, we use similarity-based classification. So we can consider each phase to have multiple trace snippets as its representation. So while training the system, we have certain traces which are labeled according to our previous knowledge with the phases that they belong to. And during runtime, we give the system input any random trace collected over a certain time window, and we want to know to what class or phase it actually belongs to. For this purpose, we need to define a similarity function which maps two objects or two trace snippets to the real number set. So the main question we try to answer is how do we define similarity measure for storage traces? And given that such a similarity function exists, how do we predict the class of any input trace? Answering the first question of similarity for the storage traces, so we use offset shift histogram similarity for NFS traces. So for example, you can consider we can record NFS traces for a time period. We use a 60-second time period window. We extract the offset fields from read requests or write requests or read and write requests. We compute a histogram out of the absolute difference between each successive offset fields. These differences are binned into sizes of 2. So that we know what are the number of bins in the system, and the histograms are normalized to eliminate any unwanted effects due to trace lengths. Now, a trace snippet is represented, has been transformed into a histogram, which is representation of a trace, and we would like to define a similarity function between two trace snippets, so we define a similarity between two histograms. Here, we adopt the chi-square distance similarity measure between two unknown histograms to our purpose, and use it as a similarity function to define a similarity score. Given that such a similarity score can be defined between two trace snippets, we can construct a matrix across all the training data to represent and call it as a similarity matrix. So this answers our question, how do we actually define similarity between various trace snippets? To answer the second question, that given an arbitrary trace, how do we tell to what class actually it belongs to? We use the support vector machine formalism. Consider support vector machine formalism for two class classification. Here the training data is a set of recorded trace snippets along with their class labels being +1 or -1. We compute the similarity amongst these traces and convert the similarity matrix into a special kernel matrix. I will describe how do we do that in a second, and give it as input to the SVM training algorithm. So what the algorithm tries to do is it tries to maximize the margin between two classes or any given two classes, and it generates certain coefficients which form the decision function. This decision function can be used as a classifier, and the output, the sign of the output of this particular decision function can be used to say whether it belongs to the class plus one or minus one. So, so for example, you can consider the blue set being one set of blue points being one set of trace snippers, and the other set being red. So, SVM actually tries to maximize the margin between these two classes and creates a decision boundary. The creation of the decision boundary depends on how do we actually define the kernel function. So, defining a linear kernel function can work in such a scenario, but it won't work in such a scenario. The accuracy will be hampered quite a lot. So we would like to define a non-linear kernel in this particular case, and for accuracy, for storage traces, we would like to define an appropriate kernel so that accuracy is as good as possible. On defining a particular kernel, the symmetric matrix, the similarity matrix that we derived has certain properties of symmetricity, etc., but it is not positive semi-definite. We use an already published technique of setting the negative eigenvalues of this matrix to zero to transform it into a PSD matrix, and we use this as a kernel matrix input to the SVM algorithm. So with this, we have a binary classifier with us, so we can distinguish between two sets of phases if we have. But in practice, we have multiple such phases, so we extend this algorithm to detect multiple phases in this particular manner. So first of all, a training set along with the class labels is given input to the similarity computation engines. Here, the similarity computation engine generates similarity matrices amongst the traces, which are fed to various classifiers. The number of classifier is a one versus one classifier. So you can say that each classifier tells if a particular trace belongs to class I or class J or not to any of those two. So the total number of classifiers that we use are M choose two classifiers. So you can say that each trace is going to be classified with a particular phase label if and only if that particular phase label has one M minus one votes out of this all these classifiers. So just to summarize the workflow, after the training, when a new trace is recorded, we use the offset histogram generator first, feed it to the similarity computation engine, which computes a similarity matrix over all the training data versus the new trace, which in turn calculates the kernel matrix and feeds it to the classifier, and the classification is done through majority voting. Now, this can be used for M-phase classification, but cannot be used if certain phases or certain I/O patterns are unknown beforehand. So we extend this particular technique to incorporate such a scenario, and we try to create a special class or an extra class out of M, so M phases, M known phases, which is known as the unknown class. So you can consider at any given point of time, we have M known phases with us and a special M plus one class, which is the unknown class for us. We do this with a slight tweak, that is, all the traces which were marked as unknown by the classifier are collected over a period of time. Then, after a desired time window, the SVM algorithm is retrained using these snippets as the training snippets for a new unknown M plus one class. So all the other training snippets and any available test snippets can be reclassified to see if at all the accuracy of detecting the unknown class increases. So in our evaluation, we first try to detect phases in a database decision support workload. And the phases that we consider in the database are load, query, indexing, and maintenance. The database workload runs inside a VM, and the image resides on an NFS server. So we capture the 60-second trace snippets while the workload goes through multiple such phases. So this set of result denotes when the system denotes the accuracy of detecting various phases when everything is known. So in this scenario, nothing is unknown and everything is pre-trained. So as we can see, the blue bars indicate the accuracy of detecting particular phases when we extract offsets from both read requests as well as write requests which are observed. The red bar indicates the accuracy when only offsets from write requests are observed, and it can be seen that providing extra information actually hampers the system. So providing only write offsets gives consistently better results than when both read and write offsets are provided. In the second case, we want to know if a certain unknown classes can be also be detected. That is, m phases can they be extended to consider an m plus one unknown class also. In this diagram, each the x-axis denotes the phase which was left unknown. So for the couple, for the first pair of bars, you can say as the load workload was considered to be unknown, and the system was trained using all other three traces from all other three phases, that is indexing, query, and maintenance. The green bars indicate the accuracy of detecting whatever is known to the system. So we have, as said, given that indexing, query, and maintenance is already known and load is unknown to the system, we can see that accuracy of detecting whatever is known has not been hampered, even though there is an unknown component in the system or there are some arbitrary workloads in the observable scenario. The second pair of graphs indicates how good is the accuracy of classifying a particular trace snippet as unknown. So you can consider that a load trace, given that the load phase was not known to the system beforehand, does the system actually classify the trace as being unknown? Initially, the accuracy is pretty low, around 17% only for classifying something as unknown. So we can conclude that the system tries to classify the trace into whatever is known beforehand. But once we collect certain unknown traces over a period of time and then again retrain the system, the accuracy dramatically increases, and within two retrainings itself, the desired accuracy levels are reached. But the system runs into problems when there are multiple such unknown phases. So in the last two set of graphs, we leave maintenance and query as unknown phases. We choose these two because maintenance can be considered as close to the load workload and query to the indexing workload. Given that these two are close to each other, even after collecting the unknown trace snippets and then reclassifying the whole system, the accuracy doesn't increase very rapidly. It does increase, but increases stepwise because the system, the load IQ, is confused whether to classify it into the currently known things or things which are distantly apart but still are considered to be unknown by the system. In the second set of experiments, we try to detect any anomalous behavior observed within the system. So we try to detect if at all we can detect hash table accesses or sequential I/O accesses within a production online analytical processing workload. The workload runs over 50 LANs, which each of size 20 GB. The trace collection time is again 60 seconds, and the analysis, that is the phase, the label emission time, is about 4 seconds. If at all we perform retraining, it takes around 4 seconds to retrain the system again. So in this graph, the red dots indicate the LAN access offsets. The x-axis denotes time. So and the lumps observed at the top, so these particular lumps are to be classified as hash tables, or an administrator wants to tag them as hash tables and wants to detect recurrence of such I/O patterns. The other set of traces, or this particular pattern of traces, is to be classified as sequential I/O. We train the system using the first 10 to 15 minutes of traces, and then we let the system run and detect whatever is going on in the system. The blue line indicates what was labeled as sequential I/O, or which trace snippets were labeled as sequential I/O. The green line indicates if it was labeled as hash table, and the yellow line indicates if at all any trace snippet was given as unknown. So it can be seen that whatever is known, that is the sequential I/O and hash table accesses, are accurately determined, but the system also classifies slow interleaved sequential I/O as hash table, because it observes it to be closer to hash table rather than sequential I/O. Now, if at all we want this also to be classified into as the sequential I/O kind of workload, we can manually give input a certain, just a couple of traces from this particular time window to the system, and then run load IQ over it. So we can see that it is now accurately classified as slow sequential I/O, or into the class of sequential I/O itself. But giving this extra information does increase the number of traces which are labeled as unknown, but the accuracy is not hampered by quite a margin. The accuracy is around 90% still. So in conclusions, we present a ML-based tool for detecting various phases. The tool has good accuracy, or very good accuracy, in classifying or tagging phases which are already known to the system. It runs into problems when the unknown phases or the unknown phases in the system are quite distinct from each other and are close to whatever are known in the system. And we would like to improve on that in the future. There are certain open questions that we would like to get the feedback from the audience. The first being, what if there are I/O patterns, concurrent I/O patterns represented in a single trace? Second is, how do we quantify the output? Now, we have presented the accuracy of the system being high enough, but we don't exactly know how to quantify the confidence measure of the classification output. And we would also like to get the feedback on how to exploit phase knowledge during system design, or we would like to know if at all certain phases are observed in your experience. What are the applications where such kind of phases are observed? These are our references and acknowledgements. Thank you.
Time for a couple of quick questions.
Jeff Kenning from Harveyman College in SNIA, with my standard question: are these traces available?
Pardon me?
Are these traces available?
Yes. We have used standard IOTA traces for production workload. The database phases are our own generated traces.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, I'm Moises, still from MSR. one of your question is the confidence measure is a strictly statistical one.
Yeah.
And that you can get from the margins of the SVMs. There's no mystery there. You should go and consult how SVMs work, and then from the margin of each classifier, you can get a measure of confidence and transform that actually into statistical confidence.
We want to get a confidence measure over all the available applications rather than a single application. We would definitely look
right
into.
Now, the second question is, I'm surprised that you use actually SVMs. This seems to be simply a clustering work, not a classification in multiple classes. That's called, it's clustering. And given the fact that you are going to be confronting confronted with unknown faces, maybe you should use latent Dirichlet allocation that enables you that. And I'm even more surprised given the fact that, given that you're using chi-square, it's not surprising that you don't get a positive definite, because it's a probability distribution that you're getting at the end. You're building kernels on that, and that's not a kernel. So I know you can transform it into a positive definite, but then why go through all the trouble if there are other techniques that, like latent Dirichlet allocation, that will give you all what you want? It may not, if you tried it and they give you the accuracy, I want to know.
I am assuming you are referring to other techniques as time series analysis or maybe clustering.
No, the latent Dirichlet allocation, and we'll talk offline, and other ways of clustering, of grouping together things.
So we have gone through clustering, but not exactly. Maybe we can talk offline.
We'll talk online. Sorry.
Hi, Ino at MSR. I kind of prefer Mike Manier's approach at SOSP, where he actually just passed the information from a higher level thing down to the system about what the phases are. Because these applications have multiple phases at the storage level, but also multiple phases at the CPU, networking, memory level. And identifying what the application is doing just by looking at the storage traces is a little bit like trying to figure out what I'm doing at home just from my electricity meter monitoring to a certain extent. So is there... Could you extend at least this work to understanding a little bit what's happening at the other resources as well and do like a multi-resource?
So the accuracy of detection or using this work to other traces or any other resources which are there, we only need to define appropriate similarity measures over any observable data. So the framework can accommodate things, but we have not defined any similarity measures over other traces. So given that we are observing storage traces only, so we try to define similarity over storage traces. But if at all there are networking traces or other traces can be collected, or traces from other resources can be collected, and a similarity measure can be defined over them, which can give good enough accuracy because...
Do you have any intuition, like say for comparing the CPU, like how the similarity metrics might actually work? Two different workloads.
So it depends on what at what level
mining.
We are observing the data.
Okay.
So if we are directly observing at the level of per instruction level, so I am not sure how do we define, but if it's at a certain higher level, well, we can get a nice abstraction of what is going on, then maybe we can.
Okay, define. Thanks.